This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. President Obama has proposed a plan to make community college free. The White House says that the program would cost about $60 billion over 10 years, and if all states participated, would include about 9 million students. The idea of free college has been part of education in Kalamazoo now for over 9 years. A Kalamazoo-based researcher says there are many parallels between the Kalamazoo promise and the president's proposal. Michelle Miller-Adams is a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo and also a political science professor at Grand Valley State University. She has written extensively about the Kalamazoo promise. Michelle Miller-Adams, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon. Always happy to be here.
So what are the parallels between what President Obama announced last week, which again is just a proposal right now, is not anywhere near being actual policy, and what has happened in Kalamazoo with Kalamazoo Promise?
So the programs have one key similarity, which is that they seek to bring the financial barriers to going on to post-secondary education down to virtually zero. One of the things that I really appreciate about the president's proposal, and that is similar to what we have here in Kalamazoo, is that the proposal he has made suggests that the grant to support students going on to community college be made on what we call a first dollar basis, which means it would be the first financial aid these students get. That is also the case for the Kalamazoo Promise. Unfortunately, and largely for cost considerations, it is not the way most of the other place-based scholarship programs around the country are structured. And it's important for a fairly subtle reason, but the bottom line is that it's important because it provides the most help to the students who need it most, who are low-income students. Low-income students are also going to qualify for federal financial aid in the form of Pell Grants. Pell Grants will actually cover the cost of community college in almost every state in the nation. So, in fact, low-income students currently have a free ride to college, although they may not know it, and there are certainly barriers to accessing that money.
So just to explain this a little more, the idea is with a first dollar scholarship, this money comes before any Pell Grants, and when you apply for Pell Grants, this won't count against you?
Exactly. You would get your federal tuition grant. Well, it would come three quarters from the federal government, one quarter from the state. You would get that first. And then if you were a low-income student who also qualified for Pell Grants, you would be able to add that money on top of that. It would support things like the cost of books, the cost of your computer, and at least a portion of your living costs. And that's crucially important because not having the resources to pay for those things is a barrier that keeps low-income students out of post-secondary education. For a middle-income student, they would get the federal and state tuition grant, but then they would be responsible for paying for their own living costs, their own computer, their own books, and of course, being middle-income, they would be better able to do that. The problem with doing it the other way, which is using a scholarship to close the gap between federal financial aid and the need that a student has, is that perversely, middle-income students get more money than poor students. So if a student is going off to community college under a typical last dollar scholarship, their Pell Grants will cover the cost and they won't get a scholarship. A middle-income student who does not qualify for Pell Grants would receive the money to pay for their tuition. So first dollar programs do a much better job of providing more resources to those students who need them more. And that is how the Kalamazoo Promise is structured. And that is also how the president's plan is structured. Interestingly, it is not how the Tennessee Community College program on which the president's plan was modeled is structured.
So there are some differences then between Kalamazoo Promise, what happens in Tennessee, and then the president's proposal.
Yes, absolutely.
Let me address, though, something that came up in the Washington Post editorial, where they said that this was an ambitious plan, but perhaps not necessarily a wise one. They said, under Mr. Obama's plan, taxpayers would pay even for those who could pay for themselves. If additional money can be found for education, why not direct it to those who face the highest barriers? And you've sort of addressed it, but maybe we can amplify on that a little bit more. Why not direct more of the money, target it specifically for students who would have a tougher time affording it?
Right. So this is the debate that we talk about a lot around place-based scholarship programs between in fact, around all social programs, between universal programs and targeted programs. Intuitively, it makes sense to take your money and target it where it's needed, in this case, to low-income students who face that financial barrier to go to college. But evidence from Kalamazoo and other universal social programs suggests that there are some very powerful advantages to having social programs delivered to everyone. One of those advantages is that the program is tremendously simple to understand, and there's something in it for everyone. The idea of wanting to make our country a better educated country by facilitating access to post-secondary education and training, you don't really want to amend that by saying, so we're only going to help low-income students get there. It's a much, much more powerful message to say we want everyone to do this. As I mentioned, that first dollar structure means that, in fact, low-income students are going to receive all of the resources they need to do this, whereas middle-income students will still need to support their own living costs, costs of books, other ancillary costs. But universal social programs tend to get much broader political support, much stronger buy-in across the political spectrum than targeted programs do. They have the added advantage of not being stigmatizing because they are for everyone. I hate to bring Europe up, but European countries have some very effective social programs, and they tend to be structured universally. So they have universal high-quality childcare. They don't have programs like Head Start where only poor kids go, raising all kinds of questions about quality and where resources are going and those kinds of things. These are programs that affect everybody in the society. And as a result, they have very, very strong levels of political support. We've found the same thing in Kalamazoo. This is a universal program. It's for everyone, the Kalamazoo Promise. Good students, bad students, poor students, rich students. And that has made it, in effect, about the whole community. Everybody in Kalamazoo feels that they have a little bit of an investment in making this thing work. And that's what a universal social program can get you that a targeted program does not.
Does this, though, bring us back to one of the things that you have pointed out in the past has made the Kalamazoo Promise of quite popular, is that it's privately funded by anonymous donors. So we're not talking about limited public resources being put into this. And for instance, the president's program, if we're talking $60 billion, it's $60 billion used for community college that can't be used for something else. Is that where we start to get into some of the details here about public versus private money?
Yeah, we do. Absolutely. And it's much easier to launch a place-based scholarship program with private money, particularly if you have a small group of wealthy individuals who decide to do it. Many other communities are doing it, and they're doing it with, some of them are doing it with money from individual donors. Many of them are doing it with foundation money, local corporation money, and some of them are even doing it with public money. But I think it's important to look at it in a little bit different way. I know this will sound crazy. $60 billion in the scheme of government spending is not that high, particularly if you look at some of the extremely high expenses that the U.S. government makes, particularly around our military spending. But if we think about this as an investment in our country's future competitiveness and basically the level of skill that our workforce has spread out over time, this is not a huge investment. I'd like to just point out that high school, which we all now accept is compulsory, universal, and publicly funded, became so really quite recently. In some states, it was not compulsory to go to high school until well into the 20th century, into the 1940s. So the movement toward universal, publicly funded high school, in which Kalamazoo played a really important initial role, we could go into that later if you want, but that was a function of the changing needs of our workforce. Previously, when the U.S. economy was more agrarian and very sort of basic manufacturing, it was okay to go into the workforce with an eighth grade education. Over time, it became clear that workers were going to need more education than eighth grade, and that's when high school spread across the states to become compulsory and universal. I think what the point the president is making and that many, many other people have made is that high school diplomas are no longer sufficient to get you good jobs pretty much across the board. That is not to say that a four-year academic course at a college such as Western Michigan University is required for everyone. Many, many of the high demand jobs in our economy do not require a four-year degree, but they do require more than a high school diploma. They require specialized skills-based training, other kinds of technical training, certification programs, shorter-term programs that are precisely what the community colleges are so good at offering. And on a side note, the Wall Street Journal had a quite negative editorial about this program, I believe, yesterday that had some really important factual errors in it. Whoever wrote it apparently didn't understand that community colleges do actually offer trade and technical education, this kind of skill-based training that's so in demand in our workforce. So I think the president's proposal is part of a growing recognition that really it's time to revisit this issue that a K through 12 education is enough. There are a lot of arguments that we really need to start earlier with universal high-quality pre-K, and we need to go later into some kind of post-secondary education and training. And some of those early middle college ideas that we've had recently introduced here are one way of getting at that, and the president's proposal is another way.
You mentioned Kalamazoo's role in sort of the history of making high school the standard, I guess you could mm-hmm. say. I mean, that came back to the question, the Kalamazoo court case, the Kalamazoo school court case, came back to the question of, is this a public good and is it a public need for people to get an education? That's more or less where that court case came down, correct?
Exactly. And this is very analogous. And it's not like the issue is going to be settled immediately, because I don't think anybody expects Congress to, you know, show up next week and pass this proposal. But it's out there. It's now formally in the conversation at the highest national level. Should we, and yes, we should, start providing public resources and making up to two additional years of education universally available for everyone. So it's not really an issue of can it be done privately or should it just be for poor kids? It's really about our economy. It's really about our workforce.
Senator Bob Corker, who is from Tennessee, where the president made this announcement and accompanied him for the event, he praised Tennessee's free community college tuition program, according to the story in The Washington Post. But he said that a big federal program wasn't needed to extend community college to more students. Instead, he said he preferred more tailored state and local efforts. Is there an argument to be made that there would be some differences in what we would need in Michigan as opposed to what might be needed in Tennessee, as opposed to California, as opposed to Florida, and that maybe the states should have a little more say in how the programs get implemented?
I think there is an argument that, and in fact, it is a reality that the states and local governments serve as these laboratories of policy innovation. This is a great example of it. The Kalamazoo Promise has sparked place-based scholarship programs in close to 40 other communities. The Tennessee program is not the only state that is considering making community college free. There's some other efforts going on. So states can be really important policy laboratories. And yes, the needs will differ from state to state. One thing I read that actually really surprised me is that I've always operated on the assumption that Pell Grants that are, you know, around $5,700 right now a year would cover community college tuition in everywhere. Turns out in Vermont, community colleges are $7,000 a year. So that's not true. So there is a wide variation in how community college systems are structured. There's also a wide variation in terms of capacity. In every state, community colleges would need to work hard to respond to the influx of students that a program like this would bring, and also a shift in the type of students. You would have students who are not necessarily ready for college going to college. We see that here in Kalamazoo with the Kalamazoo Promise. The community colleges need to respond. Those responses would be different. Those needs would be different, really almost from community college to community college, but certainly different by state. So I think there is an argument for a lot of state and local input into how these programs are actually implemented. But if it is a national priority to get all of our workforce more skills and training, leaving it up to a very, very slow process of states replicating other states and having that panoply of programs out there that are going to be more effective in some places, less effective in others, more generous in some places, less generous in others. It's not a great way to make policy in response to a national priority.
The Kalamazoo Promise, as you noted, has led to a lot of other communities trying to design their own programs, have more place-based scholarship programs in their communities. What's the status of that right now? How many are out there, and are there more that are even still in the pipeline?
Yes, there are more in the pipeline. We at the Upjohn Institute are working with a handful of communities right now and helping them think through how best to design a program that meets their local need. That is the exciting thing about these place-based scholarship programs, is that they emerge out of the local context, they respond to a local need, they are supported by local assets. And that's a really exciting policy, innovative policy approach. It does not negate the need for public funding for community colleges. It depends on your definition, and it depends how you count them. I've come up with kind of a working definition that reflects, I think, what many of us feel, which is that if you're talking about an effort to increase educational attainment, create a college-going culture in the schools, and also somehow transform your community. If you are a place-based scholarship doing that, trying to do that, I would consider that a promise program that is in some way related to this family, of which the Kalamazoo Promise was essentially the first. And the key point there, there are a lot of scholarship programs that try to increase access to higher education, but the place-based structure gives you that focus on transforming your local community, sparking economic development, increasing community engagement, transforming your district in terms of the norms of college going and the kind of community support for that. So that's what we see. What I have been increasingly concerned about, I am not alone. I work with a whole network of researchers across the country that are looking at the impacts of these promise programs. Many of these programs have been developed, and their structure has been developed with very little attention to evidence about what the program is likely to accomplish. And we also have two quite distinct models emerging. One of them is the universal model that we have here in Kalamazoo, where everyone in the school district who meets this minimum enrollment and residency requirement gets a scholarship to go somewhere, to go to the school that he or she can get into. About half the programs have opted to limit their scholarship program to higher achieving students. A handful have targeted it based on financial need, and that to me is actually fascinating. Why have these college access programs really neglected the dominant model of social policy programs, which is focusing on those who need it? But many of these programs have opted to have a GPA minimum, an attendance percentage minimum that are, you know, really quite high. Many of them require a 2.5 GPA for high school graduation, and a handful of them require a 3.0 GPA. To me, that is not really a transformative program of the type that we see here in Kalamazoo. It's essentially a merit-based scholarship program, of which we have many, but in this case, structured at the level of the school district. And I guess what is of greater concern to me, and what my fellow researchers and I are trying to do, is that sometimes these design decisions are made without really thinking through the impacts and without reference to what we already know about the impact of place-based scholarship programs. They're made based on gut feelings, on intuition, on donor preferences, and we are trying to create a stronger set of empirical foundations around these place-based scholarship programs. It's really challenging because they are quite literally all different from each other in the details. So it's fascinating, but also hard to study them as a group.
As far as some sort of grade point requirement or attendance requirement, one of the things that's been found in Kalamazoo is that there needs to be this support because a lot of students who qualify are really not ready for college. Could you argue that a grade point requirement or an attendance requirement, especially if it's stated up front before you begin high school, is going to let you know what you have to do and also make you a little more ready for college at the end of the day when you collect your scholarship?
Absolutely. And that is the argument that some of the most well-designed of these merit-based programs make. And I would put the Pittsburgh Promise at the forefront of these programs. These high attendance requirements and these GPA floors are set both to signal to students high academic expectations, create a carrot for students to work harder to meet these goals, and to better prepare them to be successful in college. And those are all really valuable goals. The reality, though, is that when you're trying to build a college-going culture in the schools and only maybe half of the students in your high school know that they're going to benefit from this program, that can really work at cross-purposes to that. And actually, Pittsburgh has taken a number of really creative steps to, I don't know if I can say this word, evade its own GPA requirements. not really evade them, but give students who fall below those requirements a hand up and an opportunity to succeed. They have a bridging program where if you fall in the 2.0 to 2.5 range, you can go with your Pittsburgh Promise to the community college, and if you're successful, you'll receive the full scholarship. They also, just this year, are starting a new program where they're using Pittsburgh Promise funding to allow students in high school to start without any GPA or attendance requirements, to start taking technical and trade certification courses at the community college. So these are all very creative ways to keep students in high school, to give them opportunity, even with this 2.5 requirement. I guess I feel that the flexibility, generosity, and universality of the Kalamazoo Promise send a really, really powerful signal to students and to the community, not that you all have to be top students, you all have to go get a four-year degree, but rather some kind of post-secondary skills, training, education is expected of all of you, required for all of you. You've got 10 years after graduation to figure out what it is. And I think that is a really powerfully transformative tool. Even if you have some students who go to college and to go to community college and fail and drop out, what the Kalamazoo Promise is seeing is that a couple of years later, many of those students are ready to go back and they know a lot more about what it takes to be successful. So over the long term, I think you're going to see a much more powerful community transformation impact from the Kalamazoo Promise than you will see in places with merit-based programs. You did bring up a really important point, and I can't believe I've gotten this far in the interview without using the word alignment, but a critical part of the success of any of these programs, and it's going to be true for the president's proposal as well, is not just making the money available, but making sure that the school districts, the community colleges, the out-of-school support organizations, the churches, the tutoring programs, the Boys and Girls Club, the Big Brothers Big Sisters are all, and the business community as well, are all engaged and aligned around the common goal of making sure that students are going to be able to benefit from these programs. You know, to be honest, the money was a very easy part here in Kalamazoo. The community alignment part has been a lot more challenging, and it's a critical part of the success of any scholarship program.
The Kalamazoo Gazette has some new data showing that students who have graduated from the high schools in Kalamazoo are doing better, at least in terms of their early college careers, than students from similar backgrounds at other high schools in Southwest Michigan, from other school districts. Is this a little more knowledge now that we have about the Kalamazoo Promise and the after effects, and how important of a piece of information is it?
Right. So this data and this article, which was, you know, really thoroughly researched and put together by our wonderful education reporter at the Gazette, Julie Mack, it's fascinating data. What it shows is that students from very high poverty schools, Kalamazoo Central and Loy Norick, serve a much larger proportion of poor students than almost any other school in our region. They are just as likely to go to college. They are just as likely to earn credits at college as students from much more affluent and suburban and traditionally college-going kinds of high schools. That's really exciting news. It's really encouraging. It suggests that there is this expectation in Kalamazoo Public Schools now that students will go on to school. And it's almost certain that the Kalamazoo Promise is behind this. Unfortunately, if we wanted to be totally certain, we would need to look at this data prior to the Kalamazoo Promise. And sadly, this data does not exist prior to the Kalamazoo Promise. Researchers working in this field really struggle with issues of data quality and data completeness. Julie, in fact, told me when she looked at this data a year ago, she rapidly figured out it was wrong and messed up this state data. And the researchers at the Upjohn Institute knew this as well and were in conversation with the state. And some of the problems with reporting and how things are reported were fixed over the past year. So when Julie went back to this data, it matched our own records a lot better. We all felt a lot more comfortable about it. But we're limited in terms of data sources. We cannot say exactly how these college-going rates have changed since before the Kalamazoo Promise. But it is really important for people to understand that students going to a district that serves most of our region's low-income and minority students are still going to college, and they're going to college at rates similar or equivalent to those from much more prosperous districts. And it's a testament to Kalamazoo Public Schools. It's a testament to the promise. And it's a testament to the students and their families who are doing something that is not generally expected of them by society.
Is it too early then, 9 years into this grand experiment, to call it a success?
I don't think so. I think we can call it a success. It has helped several thousand students go to college essentially for free. It has transformed our school district in terms of creating this dynamic of rising enrollment, more financial resources, more beautiful schools. If you've seen Washington Writers Academy, it's complete rebuild. The retention of programs that other districts with declining enrollment have had to give up. Really exciting developments around early literacy, around a college-going culture, and I think it's also been very important for the local community that so many of the students have opted to attend Western Michigan University and Kalamazoo College. For 9 years, almost two-thirds of Kalamazoo Promise recipients have stayed in the local community, and that has some important benefits in terms of financial resources, but also in terms of social capital and kind of creating that network of people who want to give back and who understand the value of higher education. I think the 9 years has also shown where we face challenges. We face challenges around alignment. We face challenges around students who are going to the community college and are not prepared. And we're all very aware of those challenges. And the Kalamazoo Promise folks, Bob Jorth and Vaughn Washington, talk about, you know, we're getting ready to launch phase two. Phase two is the next 10 years. We're going to figure out as a community how to support and surround students with the resources that they need to overcome those challenges. So the Kalamazoo Promise has been highly successful in some of these initial things that it has achieved, and it has certainly driven more students to college and through college than if we did not have the Kalamazoo Promise. My colleagues at the Upjohn Institute have some preliminary data that shows a fairly dramatic bump in the percentage of Kalamazoo Promise students going on to four-year institutions that is directly attributable to the Kalamazoo Promise in the way that they've structured this study. They've controlled for a lot of other things, and they have looked pre and post Kalamazoo Promise. So that's exciting, but the project is not complete. Everyone said from the beginning, this is a decades-long endeavor, and we're almost a decade into it, but I think we're about to engage with a more challenging set of issues now.
Michelle Miller-Adams, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Michelle Miller-Adams is a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo and a political science professor at Grand Valley State University. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.